WRY.
Hello and welcome to Screen. It's a new term and a new set of films to review and discover. I'm Beth, and with me this week is Sasha.
Hello.
And Matt.
Hello.
Liam sadly isn't here, but if he's listening out there, hi Liam.
Hi Liam.
We've got no one from York Student Cinema this week, but I just thought we'd kind of like go through which ones they've got on today. So tonight they've got out Carol.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you've seen Carol.
No, I really want to.
I would like to, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen the trailer about 16 times, but I really want to see it.
It does look good. I like the fact that there was a whole Oscar buzz about it.
Yeah.
And I think it was well deserved for that.
Yeah.
But like Cate Blanchett's always really good.
Yeah, they were also doing something weird with it, though, where depending on which award show they were going for, like Golden Globes or Oscars or whatever, they'd switch around Rooney Mara and Cate Blanchett for who was in the lead and the supporting. Just whoever was more likely to win in that category.
Yeah. I think that... Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I really want to see it. And I don't know what... I haven't actually read that many reviews of it.
Mm.
So I want to go into it a bit blind.
Yeah. Because there's been a lot about the kind of style of it and like the look of it.
Yeah.
But not as much about...
actual content and how they portray subject matter and stuff, which I think I'd be interested in the most.
I don't know what else they've got. I'm trying to look on Facebook. This is why.
This is very professional.
Yes.
I swear we are not hodgepodge anyway.
And this we didn't this just get here 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, this show will be seamless.
The next one they've got is on Friday. They've got The Hateful Eight, which I know you've seen, Sasha.
I've seen that.
You both reviewed it for
Thank
this show.
The Hateful Eight is, I mean, I would say that if you pop in for the last 20 minutes, you'll probably get the best bit of content from the entire film. It was good, but it did drag. There were a few times where I was like, I am watching a big expanse of snow with a man in a cowboy hat trekking through.
Well, yeah, there's a lot to like about it, but like it's just really frustrating because if Tarantino sort of like would restrain his ego a little bit, it could be a lot better.
It's like if you get some really good chips and then you go to put salt on it and the lid comes off the salt.
Yes.
And just too much salt goes
on. That's actually exactly what it's like.
That is the closest thing that I could use to describe what Hateful Eight is like. It's like really, really salty chips.
But it's worth going to.
Well, I think yes. I think that if you're a Tarantino fan...
For Tarantino completionists, yeah. But like, I'm iffy about like just seeing it for pleasure.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know if it's a very pleasurable film.
No, because it's just it's so long,
and
it's way too long.
It tries to keep up the tenseness. Is that a word?
It can be.
I'm making it one. It tries to keep up the tension. There we go. But because it's so long, it doesn't quite manage to.
No.
It's like you become physically exhausted with all of the tension that you are being handed.
Yeah, it just meanders all over the place. It's really sloppy.
Yeah, and there's a lot of extraneous dialogue that just doesn't need to be there, which is becoming one of my my banners that I look for in films, is extraneous dialogue. There's just a lot of like, oh, so you're the hangman. Yes, I'm the hangman. And it goes on and on, and you're like, I get the idea.
And it goes absolutely nowhere.
He's the hangman. I understood from the first like piece of dialogue that introduced that. It doesn't need to be reiterated over and over again.
Well, that's a very in-depth summative review. Wait, in case you want to see it tomorrow.
I could just review it all over again right now.
It's a spurred some very strong feelings.
But as far as I know, both of those are, same again, tickets are £3 and the doors open at 6:45 for a 7:30 start. So we can get on to this week's films.
Mm.
We've got Batman versus Superman.
Dawn of Justice.
The much anticipated review of...
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So, Matt, do you want to start us off on that?
Sure thing. So, I mean, the title really gives it away.
Yeah.
It is Batman against Superman. This is the version of Superman we've got from Henry Cavill with Man of Steel, same director, Zack Snyder, pitted against Ben Affleck's Batman, which is controversial to many people that there is a Ben Affleck's Batman. But that's essentially the most... of this film's very convoluted plot that I can encapsulate.
I've heard that it's quite confusing to actually understand what is happening at different points.
Yes. I mean, I'll start out by saying, like, I am exactly who this film was marketed at. Like, I'm completely on board with more superhero movies, and I've read all of the comics and all that. So I knew what was happening in terms of the references it was throwing out.
Yeah.
And knew that, like, everyone in the cinema except for me was completely bewildered. Incidentally, there were, like, 9 other people in the cinema.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Well, I think we've got a clip just so people can have a taste of what it's like. Let's see if this will work.
Next time they shine your light in the sky, don't go to it. The bat is dead. Bury it. Consider this mercy. Tell me.
Okie doke, so just a bit of context for that. That was Superman ripping the doors off of the Batmobile and just encouraging, strongly encouraging Batman to stop doing the Batman thing. And Batman asks him if he bleeds. Just a reminder, these are children's characters, Batman and Superman.
This is the problem that I have, okay. So I was, for a period of time, a very big Batman fan. I read a lot of the comics. I obviously invested myself deeply in the Dark Knight trilogy. And yeah, I've followed it quite a lot. I have heard that in this film, Batman shoots people.
Yes.
And Superman kills people.
I don't know if Superman does kill people in this film.
But Batman shoots people.
Don't get me wrong.
The
Superman,
look of horror on Sasha's face.
I'm struggling to deal with this.
Don't get me wrong. Like, Superman is moody and stiff and horribly unlikable.
Like
in this
Man
film.
Of Steel.
And like in Man of Steel. Like in Man of Steel, he's virtually unrecognizable as Superman apart from the fact he has a great big S on his chest.
Yeah.
Batman, however, sort of almost gleefully massacres dozens and dozens of people.
I have such an issue with this.
I know.
This is literally the entire essence of what Batman is not meant to be.
Okay, so, right. Right, if it wasn't clear already, I don't like this film. This film is... first of all, it's just...
That's the soundbite.
It's very, very sloppily made. Like, it's 2.5 hours, and if you can already tell just from that massively overlong runtime that they've cut tons of stuff out of this. It is up the bone. This is like an essay that somebody's, you know, went 1,000 words over on and had to chop everything out to get to. There are just completely bewildering little sub things that pop up and go absolutely nowhere that you sort of get the reference to if you've read the comics but are not satisfied by, because again, it's very badly done. So that's just the basic level, but on the sort of like faithful to the source material level, it's borderline unwatchable seeing these characters being so deep and serious. And you know, So Deep and Serious worked for Christopher Nolan in the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was his Batman, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it worked for that Batman trilogy, partly because it works with the Batman character, and also because Christopher Nolan is a competent director, and his brother is a competent writer.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder is not those things. David Goyer is not those things.
Ooh, shots fired.
Sorry. I quite like Watchmen, mostly. But...
I like Watchmen.
Yeah. This kind of tone does not belong in a Superman movie.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
The fact that Superman is so miserable and pessimistic and unlikable in this movie is a travesty.
Like, I understand, obviously, there is an audience for superhero films that are like Deadpool, that address an older audience, that bring in a little bit more of the adult comic lovers. Yeah. But in its essence, comic books are for... like enjoyment, and you read them when you're younger and you can still appreciate them when you're older, and it should encompass that audience. It shouldn't, in my view, exclude the original target audience by going like, we are going to be super dark and deep and violent, and we're going to get on board all of the boys who like Die Hard and that kind
it
of
feels, it feels like this movie was made for angry 13-year-old boys.
Yeah, this is what annoys me.
But also, like, I mean, just to go a bit in depth, this movie takes very heavily from The Dark Knight Returns graphic novel.
Okay.
In which Batman fights Superman. It's only a small scene in that film. It's not the premise of the entire I called it a film there. It's not the premise of the entire work. But the whole part of the dichotomy that they set up there is that Batman is all deep and dark and broody, but Superman is very optimistic and colourful, and the two of them clash,
and that's
because
that's the
versus, binary between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bringing Superman down to the same moody, mopey level as Batman just makes for 2.5 hours of just,
grumpy,
why am I here?
Yeah.
And I'll say this as well. There are four separate moments in this film, each one of which, if I wasn't reviewing the film, I would have gladly walked out of the cinema at.
Ooh.
It's that bad. Okay, so the four.
I don't think you've ever had one of those yet.
No.
I'm not going to spoil them, but the moments are how they tease the other Justice League movies that they're threatening to inflict upon us.
Oh no.
How the fight between Batman and Superman stops.
Ooh.
The great big spoiler at the end, and also there is one fight scene involving Batman, because they had to have a scene where Batman does a fight with lots of goons.
Right.
And that scene was borderline unwatchable because of how uncomfortable it made me, because of the very sadistic tracking way it was shot and the sound design, and it was just unpleasant and sadistic. And I don't have a problem with ultraviolence. Like, The Raid 2 is one of my favourite films,
but in
it was
its
the
place.
Fact it was Batman in essence what should be a children's movie.
Yeah.
It made me so angry and uncomfortable watching this very extended and very mean-spiritedly shot scene of Batman just inflicting pain. Not even like choreography, it was just a slog to watch. It was just nasty.
See,
that
I
was,
don't like that.
That
I don't
was
like
one
of,
that. It was very, very nasty. It was one of four moments where I would have been justified in walking out of the cinema, I think.
What about some of the other ones? Because there's been a lot of talk about like Wonder Woman.
Okay.
How does she come across?
Wonder Woman comes across fine. The actress is all right. The Wonder Woman really only has like three or four scenes in this whole movie, and she kind of pops in and out. They obviously didn't give her a lot of writing because I feel like they're not very confident writing women these days. But like when she shows up doing the Wonder Woman thing, it's all right. Like music-wise, she has a very good theme.
Yeah.
Which is better than Batman's theme. Batman's theme, I kid you not, in this film, is basically just duh, dum, dum, dum.
So it's like his voice.
It's sort of, if you could distill what it's like watching this film into sound form, that's what his theme is. It's just bah, 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 bah.
Do you know what this, like watching the trailers, I haven't seen the actual film, but watching the trailers made me think, it looks like a load of cutscenes from a video game.
Yes.
That someone has just slammed together and gone, this is a feature film, enjoy it.
Yes. Zack Snyder's eye for visual, he does, like, that. This is the talent I will ascribe to him. He does have an eye for visuals.
Yeah.
His visuals here are just video gamey. It's like watching somebody else play some cutscenes from a video game.
Yeah, that's the vibe that I got when I was watching
it. Yeah, and it's not fun.
Yeah. I don't have any interest in seeing it because to me it's not the Batman that I love.
Nope.
And it's not the Superman that I actually slightly already disliked, but accepted for who he was. And it just doesn't seem like, it just seems like a dark, gritty thriller that they've put in a comic book world. Not even thriller, like action film that they've just slammed some comic book names onto.
Yes, and it's a really badly made one and just obnoxious with its level of just, it's incomprehensible at points. It's
joy.
It was an
it
absolute
seems to live
slog.
Up to all of the reviews.
I tried to go into this with an open mind, even though I had, like, you know, as again as like a comic books person,
yeah,
seeing the original trailers, I was like, this does not look promising. But no reviews were correct. I think there was, I can't remember where it's from, but there was a review where the headline was just, Batman vs. Superman is a film so terrible that it'll make you hate Batman, Superman, the Justice League, and make you wonder if there were ever such a thing as heroes to begin with.
Oh, wow.
That's about where I'm at with this film.
I think, like, ours went a little bit better than that.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a nice segue onto a better film.
Am I compensating for Liam not being here? Like, just cynicism and vitriol. Yes, please, fill me with some optimism.
Me and Sasha went to see Jeff Nichols' new film, which is a sci-fi called Midnight Special. Do you want to give like a synopsis of...
Okay, so I think this is a really interesting and new take on quite a well-used sci-fi trope, which is kind of like, oh, look, there's a supernatural out-of-this-world person and the journey that normal people have with this supernatural out-of-this-world person, which has been done like time and time again. I'm sure we can all think of a film that has some kind of alien-esque supernatural being that everybody is like, oh, look at this person. But I think that it does it really well, and I think it's an interesting new take on that sort of,
yeah,
and it's quite satisfying to watch, I think, at the end.
Yeah, well, we have a little clip.
Dad?
Yeah.
Are you scared?
Yes.
You don't have to worry about me.
I like worrying about you.
You don't have to anymore.
I'll always worry about you, Alan. That's the deal.
So that was quite a quiet clip. but that was Michael Shannon and his son, Alton. Michael Shannon being the actor rather than the character.
Whereas Alton is the character.
Yes. But the child actor... was the thing that I was most worried about going into it, because I thought it looked like a promising film because I'm a big fan of Michael Shannon, and Adam Driver is also in this, who was in Star Wars, and I kind of thought that what if anything was going to bring it down, it was going to be the child actor, because a lot of the time it can be hit and miss, and we've had quite a lot of good child actors in the last year or so. It's been quite a good
been a good year for child actors.
It really has. So I was kind of on the lookout for it a little bit, and he was okay. He's like, it didn't reach the heights of, say, like Jacob Tremblay in Room.
Yeah.
But he really held his own against these like pretty substantial actors.
Yeah, I think it was one thing that we were saying on the walk home. There's one scene between him and Adam Driver. I keep calling him Kylo Ren like all of the time. Between him and Adam Driver, and that was the scene that I almost looked to as the test, because you get used to seeing him alongside Michael Shannon and that relationship. But when
it's
you
a really
see him,
strong father-son relationship
as
well.
Yeah, yeah. But he stood his ground facing Adam Driver. I felt that they both worked quite well, because I was almost expecting a little bit of a falter there in his performance. But I did think that he wasn't super super groundbreaking as a child actor, as you're saying. He wasn't like, he didn't blow me over, but he did enough to fulfill the role.
Yeah,
I think
he did well with what he had as well, because it's a sci-fi about a boy who has some, you don't actually learn what the power is at first, but you just know that he's been kidnapped from this kind of, it's like Amish like ranch that he's living at, and he's been kind of heralded as this
savior,
second coming kind of thing, because he has this power, and it's all about his dad trying to protect him from the government end up after him, and it's kind of like a big chase. It's kind of a trope that we've seen quite a few times, but the thing that they do with it, like what they do with it, and the way they kind of it doesn't end up being the it's not as predictable as you might think it would be.
I think again, one of the things that I brought up earlier, stylistically, I think it's very well done, in that there is no extraneous dialogue.
Yeah, it's very silent in a film.
Yeah, there is nothing in that film, dialogue-wise, that you do not need to be there. There's one bit where there's like a father and son non-verbal exchange, which could have been slightly soppily scripted, like, I love you, Dad, I love you too, but they didn't go there and they didn't need to. And I think that the fact that they had the guts not to have to justify every look with a bit of dialogue really made the film for me.
Yeah, I think part of that is probably because I am a big fan of Michael Shannon, like I've said, and the director, he's a long time collaborator with Michael Shannon, and a lot of the things he's done, his last film with him was a similar story in that it was a father and son, it was all about that relationship.
Yeah,
and a lot of people, it was quite nice to see these actors. So Adam Driver has been cast in a lot of kind of aggressive, kind of arrogant roles.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas he plays more of an insecure,
slightly kind dorky,
of awkward. Yeah. And it's kind of, he did use these actors that are kind of not typecast, but in a way they have a tendency. And kind of bring out another side of their acting style, which is, it worked really well because it did bring some good performances.
Yeah, I definitely think that overall it worked really well in terms of the roles that they were cast in. Each of the characters really, I think that if you'd exchanged their role for like for a different actor, it would have taken away something, which I think is a sign of a really good film when you know that the actor has brought something to the film. I just thought that it worked really well in that
way. Yeah, because I do see it as like a nice little film.
Yeah.
If it was the same, if it had the same budget as say Batman vs Superman, I think it would have flopped. I don't think it would have done.
I think it would have ruined it. We were saying that it wasn't a blockbuster, but it didn't need to be a blockbuster. And then if it was a blockbuster, that would have ruined it.
Yeah.
It would have ruined it for me anyway.
Yeah.
If it had that big, I think the smaller budget meant that it was a much tighter production, like it was a much tighter film. Yeah, I think that overall I really enjoyed this film and I would like to watch it again.
Yeah, it's not, because we were saying it's not perfect.
No.
But it's quite charming in that it's not
Yeah.
It's just a nice little...
A nice little package little of sci-fi.
Would you say it succeeds on modest terms?
Yeah.
I think so. I think that it's something that has the potential for cult enjoyment.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
It's kind of... it's got enough to hook you in and to satisfy you, but not to make you leave feeling overwhelmed by science fiction. Yeah. There's enough of a human relationship dynamic in it that it would actually be quite a good film, if there wasn't this supernatural element. Yeah. I did think that there were a couple of plot lines that I was expecting to become big things and that could have progressed really interestingly that didn't really.
He didn't really delve into as much as he could have.
Yeah, I mean... the ranch, I don't think this is a spoiler to say this, is it?
No, it happens at the start.
Yeah, the ranch, I expected to be one of the major plot aims. I thought that it was going to be a big center of everything that was happening.
Yeah.
And it's not really. The one of the guys, the preacher in it, who I thought was going to be sort of like main baddie 101 bad guy out to get him, doesn't actually show up that much in the entire thing. The ranch isn't a center point. And I think they could have taken it somewhere interesting with that, but
in terms of developing Alton's character, or the reason behind Alton's character, they could have used that a bit more. But it's very aesthetically led as well.
Yeah.
Like in terms of the visuals of it, I think that's so impressive that sometimes it can skate by a bit just on that for a couple of scenes. If it's going, there's one point where you're like, I'm feeling how long this particular scene is.
I think that there was one, in terms of, there was that one or two scenes where I just thought, oh, I'm kind of recognizing the length of this, and that's not necessarily a good thing, although it did redeem itself. But also, it did a thing that a lot of films now do that it slightly annoyed me in this film, is that it's fine to not give away all of the plot in a corny kind of sit you down and I'll tell you this story about this boy. But it took such a long time for me to actually gain any kind of proper narrative, if that makes sense. There was a long period of time where,
a lot of things,
where everybody was going, oh well, you need to get him and this is happening with him, and I was like, yeah, but what is it? I don't understand anything. That's like, I know that light comes from his eyes and that's literally all I have to go on for half of this film.
This is part of his power. This isn't just
light comes from his eyes.
Delightful eyes.
But I did feel like it took a very long time for me to actually work out what exactly was happening.
Yeah,
Which in the end didn't really matter to me that much. But at the time, I started to get a little bit frustrated. I think.
Yeah.
Because at the time I was going like, okay, well, just let me know.
I think that was his design though as well. Because that's why it's one of those that like you have to see the end, otherwise it might doesn't all come together. Yeah. It relies on each bit of each step of the way to kind of build up and then finally make sense.
Yeah. One thing that we were talking about that they did is that they actually, a lot of the, normally what happens with this trope is that you don't actually get to see any of the resolution. So you're told that the resolution happens, but you don't actually get to see like E.T., you don't get to see his home planet or, do you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas this film actually gives you some kind of sense of what the actual, like without spoiling it, it gives you a sense of the sci-fi element. You actually get to see the sci-fi element.
Yeah.
And part of me wanted that to happen and part of me didn't want it to happen, because it's always going to be difficult to portray something that someone has imagined the whole way through a movie. It's always going to be difficult to be like, how are we going to show this?
Well, just in general, alien sci-fi, it's really difficult to come up with things.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that they did do it well. I don't think I'm ever going to be satisfied with it, because I think I'm always going to, no matter what, I'm always going to have my own head.
Yeah.
But I think it did do it very well.
I thought it was a nice change, though, to have that in a film rather than it just be kind of like somebody fading away.
Yeah, or like a UFO coming and then disappearing.
Yeah, just
like
a beam of light from the sky.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Soaring music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's none of that. Okay. Which is quite refreshing.
We had a solid, there was a solid 5 to 10 minutes of actual, it wasn't like just a flash of something and then it was gone either. It was actually examining this extraterrestrial.
It's a very interesting
thing.
Film.
Yeah.
I would recommend it. It's worth watching.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It was really good. Do you think you'll go and see it now, Matt? Do you think we've won you over?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. No, that sounds really interesting. And also, it just, it sounds to me like I need a palate cleanser of something with relatively small ambitions that succeeds very well.
Yeah, I think it is quite a palate cleanser of a film, really.
As opposed to, like, Batman versus Superman, which has delusions of grandeur. It aims for incredible meaningfulness and
it's just a big licoricey mess.
It's a house of cards. It has no foundation whatsoever.
Yeah. This is kind of the opposite of that.
I think this is all foundation. This is like a low, well-built bungalow, and yours is like a tall, badly built apartment block.
Yes.
I feel like that's what, if we were to compare these two films.
We did get some messages. There were a lot about of like compliments of Matt, which is quite nice.
Well, thank you.
But there's one that says, can we talk about the spectacle of Ben Affleck's jowls squeezed uncomfortably into the bat mask, please?
Ben Affleck is very jowly in this film. Like, I don't get me wrong, like, he's stacked and they do sort of show off the Affleck torso a lot, but he is very distractingly jowly.
Oh, wow.
Well, maybe that's a reason to see it.
Yeah.
See this for Ben Affleck's jowls. Also, just sort of while we've got a bit of extra time, structurally speaking, I should mention this. Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor. Oh my god, it's like a cheese grater to your eyeballs. But it's horrible. I love Jesse Eisenberg. I think he's one of the best actors working in America today. But he's dreadful in this. But characterization wise, it feels like they must have written Lex Luthor and the Joker to be in this and then just kind of awkwardly smushed them into one character, because he is recognizable as neither.
Oh, wow.
There's lots of Jokerisms to his performance.
This and just keeps getting more damning as time goes on.
The depth of the ineptitude of this film, we could plunder
just
for
pouring
hours.
Out of you.
We could plunder that for hours, but I think we have to wrap up at some point.
I think we've got like 50 seconds left. What's out next week? Do we know?
What is
Jungle
that
Book
next week? Jungle Book is out next week.
Can I Bagsy Jungle Book? I'm
kind
of interested.
Live
there's
on air,
film...
Matt is Bagsy Jungle Book. We can't go
no
back on this though.
No take backs.
There's also a film called Eye in the Sky.
Ooh,
Is Alan Rickman's last film, which could be interesting.
Oh, I'd like
so
to see that.
Have a look at that.
I'm going to Bagsy that one. Right, two Bagsy.
Okay, so we'll be back next week with possibly those two films. And hopefully Liam will be joining us next week as well.
Yeah, but the cynicism will be back next week.
Return of the cynicism.
So it's been really nice to talk to everybody.
Nice to see you.
Welcome back.
This is the only time we get out of the house.
Yeah.
Quite nice.
Is this what happens when Liam doesn't come? We all thank each other at the end of the show.
I also think that we have to put the news on now. Not interrupting.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
See you next week.
This is your Guineas.
There was no indication that there was no indication.